It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66. WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, May 21st. How we doing this morning? Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. And since last we spoke, the week has been quite the whirlwind. I hopped on a plane to Ireland last Sunday, just returned Friday, and I was invited to the Carn Golf Links International Members Week. And what a week it was. There are so many exceptional links and parkland courses in Ireland and in Northern Ireland. And if you're a golfer and you haven't been, you must put Ireland on your list of places to visit. There are so many reasons to go to Ireland, but for golfers, one third of the world's links courses are in Ireland. And I'm sure those of you who have been there agree. Links courses, they're so inspiring. I mean, the courses, they're normally situated on the most beautiful pieces of property in the world, alongside the ocean. You have dramatic views of the coastline and, you know, very challenging conditions, mind you. But Carn Golf Club is located in Northwest Ireland in a very remote area. It's on the rugged Mullet Peninsula in County Mayo. And just driving there is an adventure in itself. If you're a really good driver, then, okay, rent a car, drive it yourself. They drive on the left side of the road in Ireland, and the driver's seat is on the right side of the car, so it takes a little bit of getting used to. But, you know, the roads weave through this stunning scenery, and to me, the adventure of driving from one golf course to the next is really a big part of the fun, and it's just so scenic. So this Carn Golf Club, it's situated along the Wild Atlantic Way with dunes that are about as high and dramatic as I've ever seen anywhere. The course features 36 holes. Nine are the original Eddie Hackett design. He's a well-known Irish architect, passed away a while ago, but the holes maneuver around majestic dunes. You have these 360-degree views of the Atlantic Ocean and the Irish countryside, and you know, he really used the natural contours of the land for the tee areas and the greens, and very little earth was moved. And back in 2013, nine more holes were added, and it was a vision that Eddie Hackett had for the course, but sadly he had passed away before it was completed. And then years later, Carn added an additional 18 holes, and it's called the Wild Atlantic Dunes. And you know, the dunes course is just amazing. And the first day I played with Jerry Maguire, the chairman of the club, and he wasn't kidding when he suggested I aim for the gray cow down on the right. you're golfing along like this farmland, and you're seeing cows and horses running around, and you're seeing the Atlantic Ocean as the backdrop. And, you know, I first taped my sports interview cable show there way back in the mid-90s. And back then, it was truly a hidden gem. Very few American golfers really knew about it. Well, today, most golfers have heard of Carn, and the club attracts visitors from all over the world. And I was honored to have been invited to participate in their first members week. And on Friday evening, I had to leave Friday morning, but on Friday evening, they had a banquet, and they named Tom Coyne, who you have heard on this show. He wrote a book called A Course Called Ireland. And they named him the first international members president. So that was cool. He was very touched by that. And I think when he came on this show, he had just written his book called A Course Called America. So you can stay in the little village of Balmullet. It's about a 10-minute drive to the club. And there's this famous pub there called McDonald's Pub. And the owner of that pub is not only the entertainment for the evening, and he sang for hours, just went on and on and on. It was awesome. He's also the village undertaker. I kid you not. Oh, my gosh. It was just too much fun. And we had a great visit to Dunebag as well. I love that course. I've been visiting Dunebag since the days it opened. It's on a spectacular piece of property overlooking this crescent-shaped beach and the Atlantic Ocean. And Greg Norman designed it. And I interviewed Norman there years ago when he played an exhibition against Padraig Harrington for the official opening. And that course is in great shape. They've made several major improvements. And, you know, there's nothing better than Irish hospitality. They are very genuinely happy to see us and very warm and welcoming. And then I capped off my trip with a visit to Dromoland Castle. And that place is just magical. The castle dates back to the 15th and 16th century. And they have a championship golf course there. And they're going to be hosting their second straight Irish Women's Open August 31st through September 3rd. It's the KPMG Women's Irish Open. So just a lovely, lovely trip. Dromoland Castle, it's only 15 minutes from Shannon Airport. And it's a very easy airport to get in and out of. So it was just a great trip. 4 days. It was short, but so very sweet. And then I get back, and I'm off the plane at JFK, and AP broke the news that the great Jim Brown had passed at the age of 87. And, you know, there was just no more intimidating presence on the football field than Jim Brown. Now, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio. I did not see Jim play. He was before my time. But I studied his career, and, you know, he was not only the greatest running back in the game, he led the league in rushing yards in 8 of the 9 seasons he played. He was also a star lacrosse player, as you know, from Manhasset. And he played at Syracuse University. And he retired from pro football after only playing 9 seasons. And I got to know Jim back in the 90s and in or the early 2000s. And I interviewed him several times for my sports interview cable show. And he came on my Hey LaGoria, What's the Story show here on FAN a couple times. And I'll never forget one evening. It was when I hosted the Sunday evening shift on WFAN from 10 to 1. Jim Brown was my guest. And I took phone calls for him. And the first caller I put on the air, he yelled out, "Hey, Jim, how about that woman you threw off the balcony?" And I was mortified. I didn't know what to say. There was a long, pregnant pause from both myself and Jim. And then Jim, who was certainly upset, he said, "Ann, I thought you were my friend. How can you let that guy ask that question?" And I quickly thought about what I would say. And I said, "Yes, Jim, we are friends. But that is a fair question. That incident is well documented." And I just asked him, I said, "How do you answer that?" And Jim Brown said, "She never pressed charges." And that's all I said. But you know what? That was enough at that point. And so we moved on. And all the other questions I took from callers were about his incredible career. But I remember going to L.A. for business. And Jim invited me to join a group of people to go to his home in the Hollywood Hills to attend one of his American programs. He founded this organization to teach life management skills to gang members. And everyone who went to his house had to walk through a metal detector and, quote, "check your weapons at the door." Well, you can imagine, this was like before metal detectors were anywhere. And it completely rattled me. And I almost turned around and just ran back to my car, knowing that, you know, the leaders of the Crips and the Bloods were going to be at this meeting. And but my curiosity got the best of me, and I wanted to hear how Jim Brown was talking and dealing with these gang members. And boy, it was most impressive. He had their complete attention, their complete respect. They were in awe of Jim Brown. And he really made a huge impact on many of their lives. I remember back in March 91, I was asked by Rudy Riska, who ran the Downtown Athletic Club, to give the tribute to Jim Brown, who received the Street and Smith All-Time All-Pro Award that evening. And it was just an honor that they and asked me to do that. I have a lot of photos from that evening. And, you know, some really good memories. Jim loved to play golf. He played in many celebrity tournaments back in the day. And I was invited to play in the Ernie Davis Memorial Golf Tournament up in Elmira, New York, and Sal Chilero, who was the publisher of Street & Smith magazine, he arranged for a bunch of these NFL greats and me to fly up to Elmira in a private plane to play in this celebrity tournament. And, there, you know, I was the only woman playing in this tournament. And so they had a long drive hole, and the ranger told me, "Go ahead, go up to the 40s. You can hit from the 40s. So I crushed this drive, and it landed about 50 yards past where the long drive sign was. And we drove up to the sign, and I looked on the, you know, to put it by my ball. And do you know whose names were on that long drive sign? Lawrence Taylor and Jim Brown. So my claim to fame is that I beat both these guys in that long drive competition. Anyway, Jim Brown was a very compelling interview, and I talked to him. I have some cuts that Ed was able to put together from an interview I did with him in 1991 at what used to be the East Side Tennis Club in Long Island City. We were outdoors, and the Queensboro Bridge was behind him. And it just seemed like this appropriate backdrop for Jim Brown, who was such an intimidating force in sports and as a civil rights activist. And so Ed put together some of these cuts from my interview with Jim Brown. And let's start with this one.
The many sides of Jim Brown. I'd like to start by talking about spiritualism, because I guess this is one of your new things, or you've always been pretty spiritual?
I've always been spiritual. If you deal with my being outside of society, you know it would have to do with my individuality and my worshiping of God rather than man, because man tries to get you to worship him. He gives you trophies and he gives you positions and he pats you on the back and expects you to respond. I respond only to God. I don't use God in the term of just a being, but I feel that God is in all of us and not necessarily practicing any religion or any particular doctrine. So I have great respect of nature, the balance of nature, and I've called upon those things to survive all of these years, because if I didn't have a spiritualism about me, I would have been a broken person at this particular time.
And here's another cut from my interview with Jim Brown.
Where did you learn the various philosophies that you live according to?
Well, I was born with a certain attitude. I never could stand discrimination or racism. It totally turned me off since the day I can remember it. But yet I was not supposed to say that. I never took great pride in scoring a touchdown and having 80,000 people cheer for me when I couldn't go into a restaurant and sit down and eat a meal. I never worshiped people who were presidents when they allowed discrimination to go on. So it left me only in the spiritual world, because I realized that truth is not going to be your interpretation of mine. Truth stands on its own. So I have to recognize it about myself and recognize it about the people around me. So I have to face the fact that I have faults and work on them and to be better. And I have to be able not to discriminate and to have an open life, which I do. I don't discriminate.
Jim Brown, may he rest in peace. I'll play another cut later in the show. But this morning, we'll cover the PGA Championship from all sides. Jason Ballard, the head golf professional at Oak Hill Country Club in Rochester, New York, side of this PGA Championship. He's going to join us in a few minutes. He's been at Oak Hill since 2014, so we'll get a sense of how the course will be set up for the final round. And then at 8:40, we'll visit with Matt Adams, who's also up at Oak Hill. He's the host of Fairways of Life, and also a host and reporter for the Golf Channel. So we'll catch up with Matt at about 8:40. But wow, Koepka, Brooks Koepka, four-time major champion, two-time PGA champion, Brooks Koepka, sole leader by one at 6-under, heading into the final round this afternoon. Victor Hovland and Corey Connors are one back. It's going to be hard for Koepka to be beat. He's playing aggressive golf, and it's paid off. And especially after what happened at the Masters, he was heading to the final round. He admitted earlier this week that he choked at the Masters in April. He had a four-shot lead when he resumed the third round. He was up by two to start the fourth round. He ended up shooting that plus 375 in the final round, losing to Jon Rahm and coming in tied for second. Well, he has gotten over that, folks. And he is going to be very, very tough to beat. The leaderboard's very exciting. We will be talking about it the rest of the show. So hang in there. And the forecast today in Rochester is sunny with a high of 73. There should be wind, so that should be a factor. The winner's going to take home $2.7 million. And the final pairing of Brooks Koepka and Victor Hovland, Hovland and Corey Connors, one behind. Hovland and Koepka will be the final pairing at 2:30 this afternoon. Coming up, Jason Ballard, the head pro at historic Oak Hill Country Club. But first, let me tell you that many of the world's best golfers will tee up at the Travelers Championship June 21st to the 25th. John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, 2022 champion Xander Schauffele, and many more. The Northeast's only PGA Tour event will feature next-level competition, next-level thrills, next-level excitement. For tickets and information, visit travelerschampionship.com and be sure to catch all the next-level action.
It's blazing hot outside. You get into your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
T-Mobile's network can help keep you connected to all your favorite podcasts when you're out and about. Whether you're an early bird looking to dive into a daily news podcast or a night owl who wants to catch up on the latest reality TV drama, T-Mobile will keep you connected on their strong and reliable network. T-Mobile covers more highway miles with 5G than anyone. So if you need great coverage, especially when you're on the go, check out T-Mobile. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/CY. That's S-E-E-W-H-Y.
The first ever Mazda CX-90 is absolutely incredible. This is the perfect three-row SUV packed with tons of safety features like lane keep assist, smart brake support, and a 360-degree camera that makes driving this three-row SUV easy to drive. It is thoughtfully designed around the driving experience. The Mazda CX-90 is powerful and responsive. It's unlike any other three-row SUV I've driven. Visit your local Mazda dealer or MazdaUSA.com and schedule your test drive.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf on this Sunday morning. Hope you're having a great morning so far. And the final round of the PGA Championship at historic Oak Hill is upon us. Brooks Koepka, the leader by one. Victor Hovland and Corey Connors, one shot back. Bryson DeChambeau, three shots behind. Justin Rose, four shots back. Scottie Scheffler, also four back. Rory McIlroy, five behind. I mean, it is a loaded up leaderboard. Justin Saw, Michael Block, both at even par. Eric Cole, Tommy Fleetwood, Shane Lowry, they're among guys at plus one. And joining us now to talk about it is Jason Ballard, the head golf professional at Oak Hill in Rochester, New York. And if anyone knows this course and the challenges it presents to the top players in the world, it has to be Jason. Welcome to the show, Jason Ballard.
Thanks, Anne. It's great to be with you. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I'm sure you're very, very busy. It's been probably a fun, hectic week. But this golf course is so very tough. And, you know, with the wet conditions yesterday, instead of making it actually softer and a bit easier, it made it more challenging, don't you think?
Yes, we certainly saw the greens get a little bit softer and the ball stop a little bit quicker. However, you know, the rough was really wet and thick, and it created a lot of problems. Today, we're expecting beautiful weather today and a little bit of light wind, so hopefully it will dry out a little bit, but the golf course is really holding up.
It definitely is holding up. I remember reading Bryson DeChambeau saying earlier in the week he was looking at the course and he didn't know how shooting under par was even possible. But what makes it so difficult?
Well, just to give you an idea, if you play the back tees and you're a 0.0 index, you'd have to play to a 7 handicap. And just to fast forward a little bit, if you're a 10.0 index, that would convert to a 21 handicap. So it's just it's a very, very difficult golf course. Our average fairway width is about 26 yards wide. And this time of year, the rough is extremely thick, as you know, in Western New York. And we know how to grow rough and grass in May. And so the championship feels a little bit different this time of year than it does when it used to be in August, because at that time the rough had thinned out a little bit from the heat of the summer. So, I'd say the width of our fairways is one of the key factors in resistance to scoring here at Oak Hill.
Right, so narrow fairways, very thick, just gnarly rough, and you know, the greens are challenging. And I know you became head pro there, what, in 2014?
That's correct.
So you were probably very much a part of the renovation to the golf course when Andrew Green and his team did it in, 2019, right?
That's correct, yeah. Andrew's become a great friend of the club and of mine, and he has been so accessible to us for any consulting since the renovation. And we've made some tweaks even since he finished in 2020. And I have a meeting with him today at the club here. He's just a great friend, and I'm so excited to see his success for the future. I think the sky's the limit for what he can do.
So are these changes, did it make the course even more difficult than it was?
You know, it's a matter of opinion. You know, a lot of our members thought that the tree-lined fairways is what, you know, kept the players from scoring really low here. But what we're seeing is, you know, a lot of times when you challenge players to challenge dog legs left and right, and when you had trees that blocked those, they only could hit one shot in the past, and it's a straight shot. And so now when they're challenging these dog legs, they're finding themselves in some more trouble. So what Andrew's done is really confused the golfer a little bit into giving them more options. And sometimes that's good and sometimes that's bad.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be on that fairway or forget it. I mean, Corey Connors looked unflappable most of the round. You know, he birdied 8 and 15. He had a one-shot lead at 7 under heading to 16. But then on 16, his tee shot found that bunker. And that was tough luck for Corey Connors, right? It plugged in that bunker, and it was buried in there. They couldn't find it, so he got relief. But it was still in thick rough on that awkward lie, and he ended up getting a double there. But it just goes to show you could be playing just incredible golf, and then you have one bad shot in a bad spot off the fairway, and you know, I know he's only one back, so at least he's still right in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, Corey's such a good player, and, you know, he hits so many fairways, and that's kind of what you have to do here. So you have to watch out for him today. I mean, yes, he had that one little mishap on 16, but it's tough to get around this golf course and not have at least one mishap. So, you know, you preluded to it. I mean, we have a fantastic leaderboard. We couldn't be more excited. And how about Michael Block, a fellow PGA club, you know, club pro, to be in the top 10? What an amazing story, an amazing run. And I'd like to see him do well today.
I mean, I was going to ask you about that. Being a head pro yourself, you must just be loving, you know, Michael Block. You know, even par for three straight rounds. He's a teaching pro at a public golf course in California. This is the first time he's made the cut in, five PGA championships. And he's just loving it. He's just embracing it. And he's so appreciative. And, you know, CBS mic'd him yesterday. And I thought, you know, this could be distracting. Why are they doing this? You know, because, you know, I figured, how can you focus on all this? And he went out and he birdied that hole and the next, right?
That's correct. Obviously, it's working for him, and he's got a big pairing today with kind of a hometown favorite here a little bit with Rory and his connection to Rochester. So that's going to be a group that's going to be a lot of fun to watch, and I expect big crowds will follow them around the golf course.
Oh, my God. And he was playing with Justin Rose yesterday, and he said he was in such awe of Justin Rose that for, like, the first couple holes, he couldn't even look at Justin Rose. He had to look at Justin Rose's shoes because he didn't want to just get overwhelmed by the whole scenario, right? What do you think he's going to do today?
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, Justin Rose only beat him by one shot yesterday, so maybe Justin Rose became a believer as well in Michael Block. My guess is he's going to play great. I think Rory, and I've been fortunate to know Rory a little bit, he's such a nice person, and so I think that will be a great pairing, and I really look forward to seeing what those two can do on the golf course.
Yeah, I definitely think Rory will make him feel very comfortable. So how long is the par 3 15th hole playing today?
You know, it's interesting. I haven't gotten – they're still going around the golf course as we speak, and we get updates every three holes. We have them through the first nine holes as of right now. So I can tell you that the hole location is going to be in the middle on the right. Oh. So it shouldn't play much more than about 160 yards, 65 maybe at the most in that range.
Yeah, I was looking at the pin placements. Oh, my goodness. Could they be any more difficult?
Well, the ones you're going to want to watch, I'm excited to see, are 8 and 9. 8 kind of in the back right area. Very difficult to get back to that location. Then number 9 front left on a very, very small plateau. So if the greens somehow get firm a little bit this afternoon with, you know, drying out, those could be two fun holes for fans to watch.
Was there water on that 15th hole before the renovations?
There was. On the right-hand side, there was a pond.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and
why
Andrew...
Why did they remove the water?
Yeah, it didn't really fit in the original Donald Ross design. He never designed it with the pond.
Okay.
So that green has been moved over the years. But I thought what Andrew Green has done since then, by removing the pond and making the green a little bit more accessible and fair, still playing very hard for a short par three, but... yeah, our members are so excited about the changes that Andrew's done, and we're over the moon with his success, and can't wait to see what happens in the future for him.
That was some great par save for Rory on that 15th hole yesterday.
Yeah, I can tell you that. I'm looking through the stats here on hole number 15 yesterday. Again, remember, short par four, par three. It played at even par for the day, and even over par on round one. So, you know, those are, you know, they're hitting 9 irons into that hole and not really making a ton of birdies. So that shows that the hole is still hard, even the way it's set up now without the pond.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, Scottie Scheffler. He just had, a horrible round by his standards yesterday, plus three, had four bogeys in his first seven holes, and including that bogey start. He only had one birdie, and he's at 2 under, 4 shots behind. But that bogey on 7, boy, that was lucky. His ball like skipped out of the water there. And, obviously he realized it saved him a full shot there. He was just lucky with, that ball didn't land in the hazard.
Yeah, you could say it could be divine intervention or something, because, you know, we had so much rain yesterday that the water level was higher than normal in that creek. And so it skipped. But if it had been a little bit lower, it probably wouldn't have skipped out. It would have stayed in there. So sometimes you need good breaks in major championships to win. And so, you know, who knows what that means for him today.
Jason, you have some resume. I know you grew up in Santa Rosa, California, right?
Correct.
In fact, I think the Charles Schulz Museum is in Santa Rosa, if I remember correctly. Have you been to his museum?
Yeah, funny story. My great-grandparents owned the land that that Charles bought from them to build his studio where he did all his drawings out there. So a little connection.
Oh, my gosh. I had the most... I just adored him, and I did an interview with him for my show on the Golf Channel, and he signed a couple sketches for me of Snoopy putting, which are just so special and so cherished, and I signed my book for him and put him in my book, A Passion for Golf. And then a friend of mine was at the museum, and I guess they have a replica of his office in that museum, and the guy wrote me and said he saw my book, A Passion for Golf, in that museum. So,
oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, I was very tickled by that. But so you grew up in California, but your previous stops include East Lake Golf Club in Atlanta, a little-known club called Augusta National, thank you very much, Congressional Inverness, so... I guess you brought a lot of variety of experiences to Oak Hill, right?
Yeah, you know, I've been very fortunate and have worked for some very good golf professionals and some very good clubs over the years, and have networked. And I'll tell you, I've learned a lot from each one of them. And but being at Oak Hill and being the head pro at Oak Hill, and especially being the PGA head professional at the PGA Championship, there's really nothing like it. And I'm very honored to have this title at Oak Hill.
Well, continued success. I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do you think will emerge as the winner?
Well, you know, I probably have to do the politically correct thing, and I'm going to say, how about we root for Michael Block, our fellow PGA club professional?
Oh, wouldn't that be the story? I mean, it's already been a great story, but boy, if he could win it, what a great story that would be. Jason, thank you so much. Continued success at Oak Hill, and thanks for joining us here on Talking Golf.
Thanks, Ann. Take care.
Really appreciate it. Have a great final round. Coming up, Matt Adams. You know him from his work on the Golf Channel and host of Fairways to Life. But first, let me tell you that many of the world's best golfers will tee up at the Travelers Championship, June 21st through the 25th. John Rahm, Scottie Scheffler, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, 2022 champion Xander Schauffele, and many more. The Northeast's only PGA Tour event will feature next-level competition, next-level thrills, next-level excitement. For tickets and information, visit TravelersChampionship.com and be sure to catch all the next-level action.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talking Golf on this Sunday morning. Hope it's a great one so far. And Matt Adams joins us, host, reporter, Golf Channel, and host of Fairways of Life, streaming live weekdays on YouTube and on national TV and on MSG Network in this market. Matt, welcome to Talking Golf.
Hello, Ann. Welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be back. And before we get to the PGA Championship talk, I know you're a huge sports fan. And I've been playing several cuts this hour from a TV interview I did with Jim Brown way back in 1991. And here's one more cut I'd like to play, Matt, from the Sports Interview Show. As Jim Brown talks about his work teaching life management skills to gang members in Los Angeles.
Well, in essence, I run a program called American Program. Last four letters in American, I can. I can equates to the responsibility of self-determination. I believe that we have to give people the skills, the life skills, so that they can manage their lives correctly. I think that most programs deal with symptoms and not problems. I think drug abuse is a symptom of a people problem. You change the thinking of the individual, that individual can change. You give that person, allow them to get higher self-esteem, they can produce something. And you allow them to learn the life skills and they can function. And whatever you do, people are going to have these life skills to function as a productive citizen in this country. So the American program teaches those life skills.
All right. Well, my condolences to the family of Jim Brown. And just, Matt, you're a huge sports fan. I mean, he was really the greatest, right, on the field. And only a 9-year career with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, a 9-year career because he basically decided to cut it short because they gave an ultimatum. Either you play professional football or you make motion pictures. And he felt like he could make a bigger impact, and it more so sang to his soul to do the films. And that's why he decided to do that. I mean, his life and his impact obviously went across decades and decades and decades. But I think it's a particularly good window into what were the very socially turbulent times of the 1960s. I mean, when people talk about the times that we're going through right now, think about our friends that lived through those times with the assassinations, with the war in Vietnam, with everything that was going on in a post-World War II world and America. The fact that this man was willing to stand up at a time when African Americans were not allowed that luxury, he, Muhammad Ali, there were very few that you can count on that had the platform to make an impact that they did because of their words and their convictions. So, yeah, it's a very, very distinctive life that he lived. I think a lot of times, Anne, I'm sure you agree with this, I think it's sad that someone passes away and we go, they're going to be missed. They were making a big impact. And it's like, were we really reaching out to them? Were we really asking a question? So that's why I think it's great that you have an archive of interviews so that we hear their voices and we know what their perspectives were.
And talk about his platform. He did use that platform, and he was quite critical of others who did not use that platform. And, you know, the interviews I've done with him are pretty intense. He was pretty outspoken, and, you know, I didn't want to play, you know, some of those cuts, but you can hear the whole interview on my website and via social media outlets. But let's talk about the PGA Championship. You've been up there all week. Brooks Koepka, when he's healthy, he's really unstoppable. I mean, I think he learned so much from the Masters, Matt, and he did say he choked. He was pretty hard on himself, but I can't imagine him, like, kind of going out there and not playing aggressive golf today. What do you think?
Yeah, I think if anybody's going to catch Brooks, which I think would be great just for the whole currents and stories of the game, if Brooks ends up winning. I'm not anti-Brooks. I'm not anti-leagues. I believe in people playing golf. I look upon golf as a buffet, and what one person may find as the most delicious thing they've ever consumed, another person may find completely rancid, but that's why we have buffets. So consume what you please. So I think it would be great for the game of golf if Brooks Koepka wins, because he is a polarizing character. He is a person that people have opinions on. He is a person that people cheer for or cheer against for whatever variety of reasons that they have. And to me, that's the epitome of sports at every level. We always have those that wear a white hat and those that wear a black. So from that standpoint, I don't expect Brooks to back up. I don't expect that Brooks is going to be battling demons. He was battling physical problems that you alluded to previously. But his bravado, his conviction of who he is and where he belongs and what he's already earned could be second to none. Having said that, I do think that it's possible, given the conditions, that we could see someone charge from behind and do something extraordinary. That would have to be somewhere in the vicinity of a 62 to 64 today, in my opinion, in order to pull it off. But it is possible, and that to me is what makes this final round so compelling.
Oh my gosh, anything can really happen. But just getting back to Brooks for 1 second, he played with Bryson DeChambeau yesterday. What an intriguing, pairing, right? And yeah, I couldn't believe. Well, I guess I could. The loud boos on the first tee when they both teed off. Now, some people cheered for Brooks, but there is a lot of booing against him and Bryson. Were you surprised by that, Matt?
No, I wasn't surprised in the least bit by it. Again, going back to what we were just talking about, you're talking about.
Oh, did we lose Matt?
And,
oh, there you go. Say again. I just lost it for a second. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. I was just saying that sports, right? And so, and you heard some birds, which it's hard to tell which one they were for anyway. But I don't think you're going to hear that if he's going marching down the 18th green and he's going to become the champion of that environment. So that kind of a flow and ebb is a normal thing. When you go to Fenway Park, they boo the New York Yankees. When you go to Yankee Stadium, they love them. That's going to happen. Again, to me, that's part of what I love about sports is that the fans get so engaged. They're not always right about it, incidentally, because a person like you that knows the actual people behind the image, you know, for example, like back in the day, I used to have people all the time tell me, oh, I don't like Ian Poulter. I just don't like him, you know, blah, 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 because they're seeing the Ian Poulter from the Ryder Cup. Meanwhile, all of a sudden they find out that he flies a 747 in every year of kids that have serious illness, some of them terminal, with their families to go to Disney World, and all of a sudden they go, really, that same guy? Yeah, yeah. So that's the nature of sports.
Yeah, and I know Brooks won two of his four major titles in New York, the Shinnecock U.S. Open in 2018, the PGA Championship at Bethpage 2019, Bryson winning at Wingfoot, and you would figure New Yorkers should embrace these guys, but the LIV Golf thing really turned some people off, so you get both sides of the coin there.
Well, remember, when you've got two guys coming up to a tee box, boos ring out. It's like the mashed potato guy and all blah, 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 and all the other people that scream and yell. Those types of outbursts sound louder than everything else. The booze so much, but when people yell stupid things and the ball is hit, again, everyone says lighten up. They're just trying to be fans. It's fine, but if they yell it too late because they've had a little too much consumption, then they can impact a player's impact of the golf ball, and that's not fair. So from that standpoint, I believe the reason that people do it is to hear themselves. Later on, they're going to hear them say, oh, that was me yelling, or whatever stupid thing to yell. I think the easy way to do it is the compression between a golf club head and a ball is so loud. It can sound like a firecracker going off. Turn the mics off at the tee. Just take away their platform. Leave the mics on out in the fairway, and you can hear everything that is said or hit. And then you don't have to worry about this guy just wanting to hear himself.
And you know what was really loud as well? The raindrops, the audio that came across on the network coverage. I mean, it was loud. I know it rained a lot, but I mean, you could really hear it. Victor Hovland, Corey Connors, one shot behind, both ready to pounce, Matt, to win their first majors. And Victor's been up there so many times for such a young age. What do you think of their chances to kind of close this out today?
I was assigned to follow Victor at the Open at St. Andrews, and my sense with him is that he's better in a chaser position. He's better not being the one with the target on his back. He's better the one saying, hey, I can take a chance here, so that you're not playing defense, you're not getting too conservative. You're actually saying, no, I'm gonna go after this pin, what have you. It's the same attitude that Rory McIlroy said he was going to have this weekend. He said he was going to go out there, hit driver everywhere, and just be aggressive as he possibly can be. So I think if Victor is in that position, it's a very good position for him. I also feel pretty much the same way about Corey Connors. Corey Connors has a beautiful golf swing. He's a multiple-time winner like Victor is on the PGA Tour, but they're both looking to break through on the major championship stage. And instead of being in front and having everyone go after him, instead of being the hunted, I think they're better off as the hunter. So for both of those, I think it's a good position.
Yeah, I agree with you. I definitely agree with you. And boy, I mean, Connors looked just incredible most of that round, and that was just tough luck, you know, when his tee shot plugged into that bunker. It was brutal. They couldn't find it. And, you know, then that next shot he hit was just on this awkward line, and he doubled there. But he was just so impressive most of the way.
He is impressive. He has a swing that Billy Cratchit's one. He gave me this phrase that I absolutely love. He said the same thing about Cam Smith. He said, at the top of their swing, they put the club to sleep. I just love the way that was phrased. There's no violence in transition. It's almost, the phrase speaks to itself. They put the club to sleep at the top of the backswing. And so it just sets up his tempo, and he hits these beautiful shots. He's the type of guy that you could watch hit shots all day. And much like back in the day with Ernie Els, you'd watch Ernie and be like, oh, it's so just languid and smooth and easy. I'm amazed at how they pound the golf ball. You don't realize how much club head speed they're actually generating with the arc that they have.
I talked about Michael Block with Jason Ballard, the head golf pro at Oak Hill, and what a great story. Could you imagine what he's feeling now? He's going to play with Rory McIlroy this afternoon. What are your thoughts about Block's chances?
Well, I think it's a couple things. One is, this is the PGA Championship. So there are no amateurs in this field. It is only professionals. It started because the PGA of America was it. That's how the PGA Tour started. They didn't break until the late 1960s to become the PGA Tour as a separate organization from the PGA of America. So this is a step back into their history when they had a touring division. But back in the day, even as late as the 60s and 70s, you had guys that would come down and they would play in tour events in the wintertime, because otherwise in the summertime they had to be in their golf shops working. I mean, it wasn't until the 1964 that the U.S. Open switched so that the guys could get, because they had to go back to their golf shop on a Sunday. Everything used to wrap up on a Saturday. That's why Ben Hogan's famous one iron, he was so exhausted he had to hit a one iron, where the next day he hit a four iron from the exact same spot, because they had played 36 holes on his legs that were dead. So I think Michael playing as well as he is, representing the 20 PGA professionals and greater, representing the nearly 30,000 PGA professionals that have been centuries to the gate of the game all around America, is great. I don't have any problem whatsoever that those guys are in the field. I feel, yes, it's a throwback to where we were and an honor to these guys. But most of the guys that compete at that level were guys that tried to make it as touring professionals. And for whatever reason, either they didn't have it to be a touring pro, or they didn't want it, meaning they didn't want to travel, they didn't want to be away from family or any other commitments that they had. So for all those reasons, I think it's really fun, because vicariously, I think we all kind of feel like we're a part. Michael Block's a little bit of all of us.
Absolutely. And I mean, it just shows you how much depth and talent is out there. Hey, I know you travel, you're well-traveled internationally, and you love Ireland. And, you know, I just got back from, I played Doonbeg, then I drove up to Carn for their International Members Week. And don't know if you know this, but they named Tom Coyne, the author of a course called Ireland, as their president of the International Members. And he was just really, really touched. So I know you've played Carn. It's just a special place.
Yeah. I'm an Irish citizen, actually. I have dual citizenship, and I'm an ambassador for Tourism Ireland, so it means a great deal to me. We're actually leaving this coming Wednesday, and taking a group to St. Andrews, and then swinging through Southwest Ireland after that. Carn is a unique place, as I'm sure you experienced. I actually think it's a very spiritual place. It's very rugged. It's in that rip of Donegal that looks like God reached down and ripped the land between the sea. And you can see the ragged edges where the turf just tore. And it's had thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands upon thousands of years, centuries, really, that the sea has just pounded that coastline and shaped it into what it is, and it's shaped these incredible dunes. And with all that, I always say the same thing. A trip to Ireland, if it isn't life-changing, it's at least life-affirming, because, among other things, we realize that we're just a grain of sand. And enjoy the time that you have before you. And that's the thing that I love about Ireland. They embrace life right now.
Absolutely. It was very spiritual. It's like a lunar landscape. It's dunescape that I've never seen anywhere. I mean, and as I said earlier, one third of the world's links courses are in Ireland. And it's just so inspiring to play those golf courses. Matt, I'm going to put you on the spot. Who are you picking to close it out today in the final round of the PGA Championship?
I think Brooks is going to get it done, and then it'd be a whole other discussion for another time to say what's the significance of Brooks Koepka winning again, the significance of a player from LIV winning a major and all the rest. But I do think that he has clearly demonstrated that he has the tenacity now, because he's physically able to win major championships again. So I think it's going to be him.
Always a pleasure. Love your work. Thanks so much, and have fun in Scotland.
Thank you. See you, Ann. Pleasure.
My thanks to Matt Adams, to Jason Ballard, the head pro at Oak Hill, to Ed Arzuman in the studio. Talking Golf with Ann LaGori is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. Hey, Mark Melusis is up next. Hope you enjoyed the show today. Enjoy the final round of the PGA Championship. And I look forward to visiting with you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann LaGori.